Spirit, describing a wild chaos property in April 1978. The second section is his description of Assateague Village, November 1979. And the third section is his talk about the legend of the Ragged Point Man, done also in November 1979. I'll record them right in succession.
Bill Jester, a description of the top they call Wildcat, belonging to my great-grandfather, Kendall Jester, known by most people as Uncle Ken. This property was on the northeast end of Chincoteague Island, consisting of 665 acres. This property was bounded on the northwest by Chincoteague Bay and on the southeast by Eastside Channel, which ran into East Cut. This body of water extended to the southwest line of the property. There was a fence from East Gut to Chincoteague Bay. There was a big gate in this fence that you could drive through with a horse and cart. There was a road from this gate to the old Wildcat House. The road split and went on each side of the house. This road went by the house for about 1/2 mile when it came to another fence. That went from East Gut to the Chincoteague Bay. This fence too had a big gate, and on one side had the corral in which the ponies and cattle were penned. The land below this fence was farmland. In the summer, the ponies were kept on the northeast side of this fence. In the winter, they were allowed to roam on the farmland. The old Wildcat House was one story high. The underpinnings were stone and brick cemented together. It was about 16 feet wide and about 24 feet long. It was weather boarded on the outside and lathed and plastered on the inside. The roof was shingle. The shingles were made by hand, as was most of the framing and sills. Some parts of the house were put together with pegs or dowels, and in some places nails were used. The floors were boards. Some were wide and some narrow. There were two windows in the front, and on one door on the back there were two windows. There was one window on the northeast side. On the southwest side there was a large fireplace, which later was closed, and a iron cook stove was used in place of it. The fireplace was used to heat and to cook over, and later the stove was used for the same purpose. There were two rooms in the house. One room was used as a kitchen, a dining room, and a living room. The other room on the northeast side was the bedroom. There was a garret in the top of the house. This too was used for a bedroom. This too had been lathed and plastered. It was the same shape as the roof. On each side of the walls, about 3 feet high from the floor to the roof, there was a small door cut in the wall so that it could store many things under the eaves. This attic had one window in the northeast end. I do not believe the house was ever painted. It may have been whitewashed sometime. To the northwest of the house, there was a large garden plot with a very large mulberry tree on the northwest side, with a high ridge in back of that, where a great many wild plum trees grew. These plum trees were about as large as your thumb and were a golden color when they were ripe. To the southeast of the house, there was the roof of some kind of a building that may have been used as a summer kitchen, for in those days, most people had a place where they cooked and ate during the summer, so they lived it in this manner. In the old house, there was the furniture was homemade. The old table with its four legs was made out of plain boards. They had rocking chairs, and they had chairs with backs in them that they ate on when they were sitting around or maybe on the table. Then there was in the back side of the house a steps that led up into the garret where the next bedroom was that I have just described. So this was where the old Wildcat house was. It was weather-beaten. It had never been painted, and in today it cannot be found, only parts of the underpinning, the bricks and the stone from the old fireplace. And this is the description of the old Wildcat house. My sister lived there when I was a boy, and I used to go up there and play around the house. I used to go up into the old attic, and I would crawl into the places under the eaves, and I'd get inside there, and it was dark, and I would begin afraid, and would come out and go back downstairs. I played to the east of the house, where there were these old trees that grew. These trees were a tree that had a large path in the middle of them. They were called heavenly trees, and I played amongst these trees when I was a boy. And many memories came back to me as I remembered that my father taking me up to my great-grandfather to see the great droves of ponies that he had. And I would select one out of the flock and wish it was mine, because you know how a boy is. He always liked to have a pony or a dog for a pet. But I was never allowed to have one, and I realize now that it was because I was too young. And later my great-grandfather died, and his sons inherited the property. He had a daughter who was married to Captain John Bunting, and they got most of their wealth from oysters that grew around this land, a wildcat. Captain John was a sea captain. They had a ship, and they carried oysters from Chincoteague to New York. In those days, they got as high as $1.35 to $1.50 a bushel after they carried these oysters to New York, and this was a profitable business at that time. So we know now that all of these things have passed and gone, and they are just memories, but we still go back and dream of the days gone by.
I remember when they used to fend the cattle in the old cattle pen, and they used to dehorn them. They would cut their horns off, and first they would saw them off with a handsaw. And later they got regular dehorners, something like chain cutters. And they cut the cow's horns off, and I could see the blood sometimes would spin out of those horns from that cow's head and maybe a foot in the air. And they would naturally go crazy with pain. But we thought that was brutal, but I began to realize now why they did that. The cattle, they had a lot of flies and mosquitoes. And the cattle would throw their heads back, and the cattle with the long horns sometimes would gouge themselves in the sides, and sometimes it would cause the cow's death. And although we think these things were brutal, sometimes they saved the life of many cattle. But after a while, after they kept dehorning these cattle, they had a breed of cattle here that didn't have any horns, and we called them buffaloes. All the cattle my father had in the latter days when he used to raise cattle out on the beaches, they didn't have any horns.
Yes.
They were buffaloes, and the old lobs we used to drive, they called him Old Mike. He didn't have any horns at all, and he weighed about from 1,600 to 2,000 pounds. He was an enormous beast, but never had no horns.
Isn't that
so? That's the way the people done in those days. That's it.
Isn't that so?
Remember, we used to find the old cow horn laying around, and we would use them to try to make horns out of them or play with like the amber outer horns and all that kind of stuff.
Good. You see all the pictures of the swing on.
That's right. Right down to a pole. second. It was a towing thing. So somebody was like, throwing a man's oil off.
Are you
the cattle was low, and they're doing that, but it's just one of the ways of life.
Interesting. I have no idea.
And Uncle Ken and Robert L. Watson, I tell Bob about it. I said, Bob, I said, where it was, broke the phone. Uncle Ken Jeff and Robert L. Watson were the first two men. Ever thought to take a big phone in and broke them or fragged them. The first two men
that had Victoria's father and grandfather.
I guess so. It was.
Yeah,
Robert L. Watson, this is in the record we got. We have a quite a time. Taylor Kennett comes down, and I've been knowing Taylor ever since he was a youngster. His father used to come down years ago with us. Taylor come down, and he went for a boy. So what? I used to go out for a Pope John Duck Club up there. And Bertha Kennett, of course, Emperor Cagrani was the main owner of the club. And he used to bring Taylor down. Well, after the club closed down, I hadn't seen Taylor in 50 years. Yeah, he came here one day. Yeah. My dad was sitting near the yard. Just saw he came there. They always call me Billy. Taylor always. He don't call me Billy, call me Billy. His father always called me. He said, Billy, he said, do you know me? I said, I don't know if I do or not. He said, do you know Taylor? I said, well, Lord Taylor, I said, I never saw it. I never know him until I said. But I said, that's ain't Billy. I said, your daddy always called me that, and you had too. And he always does. He's been here two or three times, and he said, Billy.
And then he did come see me.
Around about that time, there was a man by the name name of Dr. Fields, who came to Chincoteague Island. And in some way, going down to the court, he located old land grants and old deeds. And through these, he got possession of this land. And my father has told me that it only cost him about 10 cents an acre. Well, these people for many years let their cattle roam and their horses, and they also had hogs. They turned the hogs loose, and as the sows had their pigs in the spring, they would take the shoats in the fall of the year and put them in the pen and fat them, and that's where they got their meats. They would smoke it and keep it, and what they couldn't keep, they would salt. And that's the way these people lived. They didn't require too much money. But after a while, after Dr. Fields obtained possession of this land, he died, and his son, Sam Field, and his sister, Miss Nellie, we called her, inherited the land. And then after a while, after the First World War, they sent a man here to oversee this land, and this man claimed he was from Montana. He went around about the village of Chincoteague and Assateague. He wore a big gun on his hip and a big cowboy hat, as though he was a great Westerner. But we found out later that this man came from Jersey. But anyway, he gave these people a rough time. He fenced the land so these people could not walk from where they lived to Tom's Cove to work. It was a shorter distance to walk across the land to Tom's Cove, or the potation, clam, or oyster, whatever they went after. So they found that this man fenced the land and wouldn't let them cross over it. And then the people who owned the stock, there was quite a number of people who owned the cattle, and they turned them loose on the beaches too. Well, all these people got together and had to go up to the Maryland, Virginia line, and there they fenced across the beach to keep the cattle in Maryland. Because this man began to pen their cattle, and they would have to go to court and get court injunctions to get their cattle turned loose. And he would charge them so much ahead for taking care of them until the court injunctions gave them the opportunity to go get their cattle and carry them back up into Maryland. This man caused so much trouble around here with the people who were making their living at that time on the beach that they had to leave. And that's why the people on Assateague moved away, because of one man that was here trying to cause trouble. And he was after every dollar he could get. If he found a man violating the law, like shooting birds in those days, those people depended on wildfowl for the tables. In the wintertime, they had ducks and geese they could kill and eat. And then in the summertime, they had birds. And that's the way these people lived. That was the meat they had on the table. But this man would catch them violating the law. He would indict them, and he would get a certain portion of the fine.
You say something, and I'll say something. We'll see whether it's recording or not.
Well, I don't know what to say. You know, the other day you were asking me about some storm that was back years ago, and we had told you.
Yeah, I
remember my father talked about it.
Do you know?
Yeah, one of his, seemed like it was his grandmother.
Yes.
She was living at that time, and the three waves, it wasn't a storm, no heavy wind. It was just three great waves came right over the land.
Yeah.
And, of course, Uncle Ken, my great grandfather, we spoke about him often.
Yeah.
It was some of his ponies came across his path over on the mainland. And they went down later and got him.
island of Kintyre, where the Reverend Joshua Thomas, which was called a portion of the island, for holding revivals. And Parson Thomas told the English sailors that they would not be able to take Baltimore, which they did not. There were three brothers on this ship, sailors in this navy. One was named George, and Charles, and John Birch. And these three brothers, after the battle was over, they were defeated from taking the city of Baltimore, that these men deserted the ships, and they went ashore and settled down below Ocean City on a place called North Beach. One of the brothers went west, and they never heard tell of him no more. But the other two brothers stayed, and they married, and their Rodney families, and the Smallwoods, and raised their families. And my grandfather was the son of one of these brothers, John Birch. He lived in North Beach and raised his family. He had five boys and four girls. And there was an inlet to a Green Run, a place about halfway between Chincoteague Island and Ocean City, where the boats used to come in and load with natural growth oysters. And that was the business they had in those days to make a living. Well, my grandfather worked around North Beach until his family was all grown. And then a ship came into the inlet to Green Run and sand it up, and the inlet closed. So then the water began to get fresh in the bay. There was no more inlets, only from Chincoteague. And so the clams and oysters began to die because the water was too fresh. I heard my grandfather say once that one of his neighbors went out of clamming in a boat that carried about 50 bushels. And he came in with the boat loaded. And he said to my grandfather, he said, "John Ed," he said, "there's all kinds of clams laying right out on the bottom." He says, "All you got to do is pick them up." My grandfather said, "Yeah," he says, "and a few more months," he said, "and they'll all be dead because the water is getting fresh." And that's what happened. The water got fresh and there was no more clams or oysters growing, so the people had to leave these little towns. My grandfather moved to a place called Ragged Point, down on the beach, just about 4 or 5 miles above Chincoteague Island. And there he settled with his family. In those days, this beach land was pasture land for cattle. And my grandfather was paid so much a month for looking out after the stock that the stock raisers put on the beach at that time. And during the time that they lived there, my grandfather and his family, they never heard anything that is out of the ordinary. Although I heard my mother say once that my grandfather found three grounded sailors after a northeast storm, and he buried them in a little place to the southeast of where they lived, called Little Neck Hills, some hill right next to the ocean. So they didn't see anything or hear anything until one night she said that the children were playing dominoes. That was what they had for entertainment when they while away the long hours. And one of them went out in the porch to get a drink of water. They generally had their bench on the porch, a bucket on the bench where it held the drinking water. And most of the time they drank out of one of these old gourds and made drinking cups after they were seasoned and hard. And one of the children went out to get a drink of water. And he looked down toward the level, which was a sanded part of the beach between Assateague and this Ragged Point land. And they saw a light. And she said every one of the children would go out and look at this light. But my Uncle George, and he never would go out and look at the light. And a little while later, he was killed right about where the light was sighted. In those days, the wind blowing the southern, the cattle would have a tendency to go down to Assateague, where it was more cooler, and there was plenty of pasture for them. So my grandfather's old oxen and a iron colt, they wandered off down to Assateague. Well, then my father, whose name was John Jester, he married my mother, grandfather's daughter. Her name was Andasia, a name that I had never heard before nor since. And they were married at this time, so my father and my Uncle George Birch and my Uncle Charlie and a man by the name of E. Glint, they went down to Acid City to get this oxen and the mine coal. And when they went down and they got them and they're on their way back, my father said it was so hot he had on leather boots. He took the boots off and tied them together and put them across the horse's neck just in front of the saddle. Uncle George was riding the horse, and the mare colt was the ox was with him, and he was on a line about 100 feet ahead of the mare colt, and Uncle George was riding the mare, and Uncle Charlie, this the other fellow, Mr. E. Lynch, and my father was walking along. My father said it was so dry that you could break your foot on the sand, and it would make a crunching sound. And he looked out in the ocean. They were coming along up next to the ocean. And he saw a sailboat. And he said to Uncle George, he said, that sailboat out there hasn't got much wind. But Uncle George never answered. He said, then they looked up to the northeast and seen this squall coming, this thunder squall. And when the thunder squall came over them, and the lightning was so sharp, and the claps of thunder so loud, that he happened to look when he made a louder noise than any other time, and he saw Uncle George fall from the horse. So he hollered to Uncle Charlie, and he said, George is hit with lightning. They went there to him, and he was dead. The lightning killed the horse and killed him and knocked the colt down on its knees, but it never bothered anything else. And my father said in about 5 or 10 minutes' time, the water was ankle deep right on the dry levels of where Uncle George was killed. He said, then they had to go to the house, he said, and get that cart and hook the old ox up to it. And then they went and got the body of my Uncle George and carried him home. And people tell me later, I've heard people talk, they could hear his mother as she mourned as far as 2 miles away. But this was a very sad time at that time. And then afterwards, my grandfather moved to Chincoteague, him and his family. And my Uncle Jim Jester moved up into the Ragged Point house, a brother to my father. That's when they began to hear this, like a man holler, "Ooh-wee! Ooh-wee!" And the people could not understand what it was. Many people heard it. And one time, as told, my Uncle Jim began to mock this noise. Every time it would holler, he would holler. Well, them ducks, they had tame ducks in those days, and these ducks were laying out under a tree in the yard with their heads under their wings. And my Uncle Jim answered this call until it got so close the ducks raised their heads up and looked around as though they were disturbed. And my Aunt Bet took Uncle Jim by the arm and pulled him inside the house. And from then on, people began to hear every once in a while this man, or whatever it was, calling. So one night there was afterwards when Uncle Jim, he moved away from Ragged Point. He too moved to Chincoteague. And there was some men went and stayed into this old house. There was great oyster ground up there. Uncle Jim, he moved away from Ragged Point. He too moved to Chincoteague. And there was some men went and stayed into this old house. There was great orchard ground up there in those days. People planted orchards all around Ragged Point Bay, Ragged Point Channel, a place called Sheep Ridge. And they were staying in this house, four or five men, and working on these orchards in the daytime. So one night they were sitting to the table eating their supper after they'd done the day's work. And they heard this man call.
Whee!
So, they listened there in the wall. They passed it on. And so later Uncle Jim came up. He'd been down to Chincoteague in his sailboat. And he had stopped to a place called Cherry Hill Bay and had walked up to the house. So these fellows said to him, Jim, did you call a while ago? We heard somebody holler. And Uncle Jim said, no. He said, it wasn't me called. He said, but tomorrow morning, he said, the wind will be down to the north, a blowing and a snowing. And he said, it came true. The very next day, the wind was down to the north, blowing and snowing. So after that, many people began to hear this call or whatever it was. Some said it was some kind of animal. Other people who were superstitious said it might have been some spirits of some kind. But nobody never did know for certain. I heard my wife's uncle say, Burl Jones, he was up there on a duck shooting trip to a place called Buzzard Dump, which was right off of this Ragged Point. And he said over in this Ragged Point there was an old field, they called it. It was a low place of land between the ledges of hills. The ledges of hills next to the ocean, and then another ledge next to the bay. Well, in the center of this, there was a field about 2 miles long and maybe a quarter of a mile wide. People would go and get in these ponds in this marsh and wait for the ducks to come in so they could shoot them. And he said him and two or three more fellows went over, and each one went to a pond to shoot ducks. And he said he was sitting by the pond waiting and no ducks coming in. And here comes the splash, splash, splash at the feet of a man walking up the marsh. And he thought it's one of his comrades coming to him to go back to the houseboat in which they were staying. So he said, hey, are we ready to go? And they weren't getting any answer. So then he picked up his decoys and he began to follow this noise. And he followed it and it went through. There was cow path in those days. It went through the bushes and places. And so he followed this noise of going ahead of him like a person walking down this cow path until he came out to the western where Chincoteague Bay was. And he said when he came out to this bay and this noise disappeared, he said no person in the world could tell him how he felt. So he said he was about 2 miles away from where they had landed in the boat when they came over to shoot these ducks. And many times later, we heard people speak about hearing the call of the Ragged Point man. But later years, it got so it disappeared. We never did hear it no more. And we never did find out or know just what caused this person to holler, "Ooh!" like a man lost during some storm.
After Uncle George Birch was killed, my father was afraid of thunder squalls, afraid of the lightning. And he was working one time at the Sheep Ridge after that, and the squall started to come up, and he hurried and he went to the shore and he stuck a pole down in the land to tie his boat to and went into a little house they had close by. This storm came up and lightning struck the pole that he struck in the ground. And later one time when he was moved down to Chincoteague and was sailing down home in his sailboat, because they worked up there, they sailed backwards and forwards every day. And this squall came up just before he got home. He hurried and got his boat put away and went to the house. And lightning struck his boat mast in this squall. And later they had another squall that struck the corner of the house where he lived and knocked the picture of Uncle George Birch, the one that had been killed with lightning, off the wall. So my father, after that, was very much afraid of lightning from a thunder squall. And when one would come up in the summertime when we were home, he would never let any of us sit between two windows. He would make us get back in the corner somewhere or away from the chimney, because he was deathly afraid of thunder squalls. generation is the last generation that knows anything about the legends that happened in the past. And as we sit down and think about these things, we wonder many times about the things that we cannot give account for that comes along during the span of people's lives. Sometimes we're very superstitious about these things, and sometimes we might be able, if we were to look into it real close, to find the cause of what happened, as it could have been in the legend of the Ragged Point Man. My father said, after Uncle George Birch was killed, he never did find his watch. And the leather boots he hung across the horse's neck above the saddle, every nail in the boot where the sole was nailed on was melted, and every rivet in the saddle was melted too. There was just a hole in the leather where the rivets went. The lightning was so powerful that it just melted all the metal there was away. And I've heard Mr. John Ed Merritt say that when Uncle George was riding down on Chincoteague, that he was the one who sighted the body. And he said that he had one bruise place on his temple and one bruise place on each leg where the lightning struck his head and went down and came out on each side of his body. So we always think about these things because he was out in a sanded place and he was the highest object there was for lightning to make connection with.